We're starting chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called The Half-Blood Prince. Harry and Ron met Hermione in the common room before breakfast next morning. Hoping for some support for his theory, Harry lost no time. Sorry, my Kindle froze. Harry lost no time telling Hermione what he had overheard Malfoy saying in the Hogwarts Express. But he was obviously showing off for Parkinson, wasn't he? Interjected Ron quickly, before Hermione could say anything. Well, she said uncertainly, I don't know. It would be like Malfoy to make himself seem more important than he is, but that's a big lie to tell. Exactly, said Harry, because he could not press the point. But he could not press the point, because so many people were trying to listen into his conversation, not to mention staring at him and whispering behind their hands. It's rude to point, Ron snapped at a particularly minuscule first-year boy, as they joined the queue to climb out of the portrait hall. The boy, who'd been muttering something about Harry behind his hand to his friend, promptly turned scarlet and toppled out of the hole in alarm. Ron snickered. I love being a sixth year, and we're going to be getting free time this year, whole periods where we can just sit up here and relax. We're going to need that time for studying, Ron, said Hermione as they set off down the corridor. Yeah, but not today, said Ron. Today's going to be a real doss, I reckon. Hold it, said Hermione, throwing out an arm and halting a passing fourth year, who was attempting to push past her with a lime-green disc clutched tightly in his hand. Fanged frisbees are banned. Hand it over, she told him sternly. The scowling boy handed over the snarling frisbee, ducked under her arm, and took off after his friends. Ron waited for him to vanish and tugged the frisbee from Hermione's grip. Excellent. I've always wanted one of these. Hermione's remonstration was drowned out by a large giggle. Loud giggle. Lavender Brown had apparently found Ron's remark highly amusing. She continued to laugh as she passed them, glancing back at Ron over her shoulder. Ron looked rather pleased with himself. The ceiling of the great hall was serenely blue and streaked with frail, wispy clouds, just like the squares of sky visible through high mullioned windows. While they tucked into porridge and eggs and bacon, Harry and Ron told Hermione about their embarrassing conversation with Hagrid the previous evening. "But you can't really think we'd continue care of magical creatures," she said, looking distressed. "I mean, when has any of us expressed, you know, any enthusiasm?" "That's it, though, isn't it?" said Ron, swallowing an entire fried egg whole. "We were the ones who made the most effort in classes because we like Hagrid, but he thinks we like the stupid subject. Do you reckon anyone's going to go on with Newt?" Neither Harry nor Hermione answered. There was no need. They knew perfectly well that nobody in their year would want to continue care of magical creatures. They avoided Hagrid's eye and returned his cheery wave only half-heartedly when he left the staff table 10 minutes later. After they had eaten, they remained in their places, awaiting Professor McGonagall's descent from the staff table. The distribution of class schedules was more complicated this year than usual, for Professor McGonagall needed first to confirm that everybody had achieved the necessary owl grades to continue in their chosen newts. Hermione was immediately cleared to continue with charms, defense against the dark arts, transfiguration, herbology, arithmancy, ancient runes, and potions, and shot off to a first period ancient runes class without further ado. Neville took a little longer to sort out. His round face was anxious as Professor McGonagall looked down at his application and then consulted his owl results. "Herbology, fine," she said. "Professor Sprout will be delighted to see you back with an outstanding owl. And you qualify for defense against the dark arts with exceeds expectations. But the problem is transfiguration. I'm sorry, Longbottom, but an acceptable really isn't good enough to continue to Newt level. I don't think you'd be able to cope with the coursework." Neville hung his head. Professor McGonagall peered at him through her square spectacles. "Why do you want to continue with transfiguration, anyways? I've never had the impression you particularly enjoyed it." Neville looked miserable and muttered something about "my grandmother wants." "Hmph," snorted Professor McGonagall. "It's high time your grandmother learned to be proud of the grandson she's got rather than the one she thinks she ought to have, particularly after what happened at the ministry." Neville turned very pink and blushed confusingly. Professor McGonagall had never paid him a compliment before. "I'm sorry, Longbottom, but I cannot let you into my Newt class. I see that you have an exceeds expectations in charms, however. Why not try for a newt in charms? My grandmother thinks charms is a soft option, muttered Neville. Take charms, said Professor McGonagall, and I shall drop Augusta a line reminding her that just because she failed her charms owl, the subject is not necessarily worthless. Smiling slightly at the look of delighted incredulity on Neville's face, Professor McGonagall tapped a blank schedule with the tip of her wand and handed it, now carrying details of his new class, to Neville. Professor McGonagall turned next to Parvati Patil, whose first question was whether Firenze, the handsome centaur, was still teaching divination. He and Professor Trelawney are dividing classes between them this year, said Professor McGonagall, a hint of disapproval in her voice. It was common knowledge that she despised the subject of divination. The sixth year is being taken by Professor Trelawney. Parvati set off for divination, 5 minutes later looking slightly crestfallen. So, Potter, said Professor McGonagall, consulting her notes as she turned to Harry. Charms, defense against the dark arts, herbology, transfiguration, all fine, I must say. I was pleased with your transfiguration mark, Potter, very pleased. Now, why haven't you applied to continue with potions? I thought it was your ambition to become an auror. It was, but you told me I had to get an outstanding in my owl, Professor. And so you did when Professor Snape was teaching the subject. Professor Slughorn, however, is perfectly happy to accept newt students with exceeds expectations at owl. Do you wish to proceed with potions? Yes, said Harry, but I didn't buy the books or ingredients or anything. I'm sure Professor Slughorn will be able to lend you some, said Professor McGonagall. Very well, Potter, here's your schedule. By the way, 20 hopefuls have already put down their names for the Gryffindor Quidditch team. I shall pass the list to you in due course, and you can fix up trials at your leisure. A few minutes later, Ron was cleared to do the same subjects as Harry, and the two of them left the table together. Look, said Ron delightedly, gazing at his schedule. We've got a free period now, and a free period after break, and after lunch. Excellent. They returned to the common room, which was empty apart from a half-dozen seventh years, including Katie Bell, the only remaining member of the original Gryffindor Quidditch team that Harry had joined in his first year. I thought you'd get that. Well done, she called over, pointing at the captain's badge on Harry's chest. Tell me when you call trials. Don't be stupid, said Harry. You don't need a tryout. I've watched you play for 5 years. You mustn't start off like that, she said warningly. For all you know, there's someone much better than me out there. Good teams have been ruined before now because captains just kept playing their old faces or letting in their friends. Ron looked a little more uncomfortable and began playing with the fanged frisbee Hermione had taken from the fourth-year student. It zoomed around the common room, snarling and attempting to take bites out of the tapestry. Crookshank's yellow eyes followed it, and he hissed when it came too close. An hour later, they reluctantly left the sunlit common room for the Defense Against the Dark Arts classroom 4 floors below. Hermione was already queuing outside, carrying an armful of heavy books and looking put upon. We got so much homework for runes, she said anxiously, when Harry and Ron joined her. A 15-inch essay, 2 translations, and I've got to read these by Wednesday. Shame, yawned Ron. You wait, she said resentfully. I'll bet Snape gives us loads. The classroom door opened as she spoke, and Snape stepped into the corridor, his sallow face framed as ever by 2 curtains of greasy black hair. Silence fell over the queue immediately. Inside, he said. Harry looked around as they entered. Snape had imposed his personality on the room already. It was gloomier than usual, as curtains had been drawn over the windows, and it was lit by candlelight. New pictures adorned the walls, many of them showing people who appeared to be in pain, sporting grisly injuries or strangely contorted body parts. Nobody spoke as they settled down, looking around at the shadowy, gruesome pictures. "I have not asked you to take out your books," said Snape, closing the door and moving to face the class from behind his desk. Hermione hastily dropped her copy of Confronting the Faceless back into her bag and stowed it under her chair. I wish to speak to you, and I want your fullest attention. His black eyes roved over their upturned faces, lingering for a fraction of a second longer on Harry's than anyone else's. You've had 5 teachers in this subject so far, I believe. You believe, Harry thought, like you haven't watched them all come and go, Snape, hoping you'd be next. Naturally, those teachers will all have had their own methods and priorities. Given this confusion, I'm surprised so many of you scraped an owl on this subject. I shall be even more surprised if all of you managed to keep up with the newt work, which will be much more advanced. Snape set off around the edge of the room, speaking now in a lower voice. The class craned their necks to keep him in view. The dark arts, said Snape, are many, varied, ever-changing, and eternal. Fighting them is like fighting a many-headed monster, which, each time a neck is severed, sprouts a head even fiercer and cleverer than before. You are fighting that which is unfixed, mutating, indestructible. Harry stared at Snape. It was surely one thing to respect the dark arts as a dangerous enemy, another to speak of them as Snape was doing with a loving caress in his voice. Your defenses, said Snape, a little louder, must therefore be as flexible and innovative as the arts you seek to undo. These pictures, he indicated the few as they swept past them, give a fair representation of what happens to those who suffer, for instance, the Cruciatus curse. He waved a hand toward a witch who was clearly shrieking in agony. Feel the Dementor's kiss, a wizard lying huddled and blank-eyed, slumped against a wall, or provoke the aggression of an Inferius, a bloody mass on the ground. Has an Inferius been seen, then? Said Parvati Patil in a high-pitched voice. Is it definite? Is he using them? The Dark Lord has used Inferi in the past, said Snape, which means you might well be advised to assume he might use them again. Now. He set off around the other side of the classroom toward his desk, and again they watched him as he walked, his dark robes billowing past him. You are, I believe, complete novices in the use of a nonverbal spell. What is the advantage of a nonverbal spell? Hermione's hand shot into the air. Snape took his time looking around at everybody else, making sure he had no choice, before saying curtly, Very well, Miss Granger. Your adversary has no warning about what kind of magic you're about to perform, said Hermione, which gives you a split-second advantage. An answer copied almost word for word from the Standard Book of Spells, Grade 6, said Snape dismissively. Over in the corner, Malfoy snickered. But correct in essentials. Yes, those who progress to using magic without shouting incantations gain an element of surprise in their spell castings. Not all wizards can do this, of course. It is a question of concentration on mind power, which some, his gaze lingered maliciously on Harry once more, lack. Harry knew Snape was thinking of the disastrous occlumency lessons of the previous year. He refused to drop his gaze but glowered at Snape until Snape looked away. You will divide, Snape went on, into pairs. One partner will attempt to jinx the other without speaking. The other will attempt to repel the jinx in equal silence. Carry on. Although Snape did not know it, Harry had taught at least half the class, and everyone who had been a member of the DA, how to perform a shield charm the previous year. None of them had ever cast the charm without speaking, of course. A reasonable amount of cheating ensued. Many people were merely whispering the incantation instead of saying it aloud. However, typically, 10 minutes into the lesson, Hermione managed to repel Neville's muttered jelly legs jinx without uttering a single word, a feat that surely would have earned her 20 points for Gryffindor for any reasonable teacher, thought Harry bitterly, but which Snape ignored. He swept between them as they practiced, looking just as much like an overgrown bat as ever, lingering to watch Harry and Ron struggling with the task. Ron, who was supposed to be jinxing Harry, was purple in the face, his lips tightly compressed to save himself from the temptation of muttering the incantation. Harry had his wand raised, waiting on tender hooks to repel a jinx that seemed unlikely to ever come. Pathetic Weasley, said Snape, after a while. Here, let me show you. He turned his wand on Harry so fast that Harry reacted instinctively, all thought of nonverbal spells forgotten. He yelled, Protego! His shield charm was so strong, Snape was knocked off balance and hit a desk. The whole class had looked around and now watched as Snape righted himself, scowling. Do you remember me telling you we were practicing non-verbal spells, Potter? Yes, said Harry stiffly. Yes, sir. There's no need to call me sir, Professor. The words escaped him. Before he knew what he was saying, several people gasped, including Hermione. Behind Snape, however, Ron, Dean, and Seamus grinned appreciatively. "Detention, Saturday night, my office," said Snape. "I will not take cheek from anyone, Potter, not even the Chosen One." "That was brilliant, Harry," chortled Ron, once they were safely on their way a short while later. "You really shouldn't have said it," said Hermione, frowning at him. "What made you?" "He tried to jinx me in case you didn't notice," fumed Harry. "I had enough of that during those occlumency lessons." "Why doesn't he use another guinea pig for a change? What's Dumbledore playing at anyway, letting him teach defense?" Harry's thinking. "And did you hear him talking about the dark arts? He loved them, all that unfixed, indestructible stuff." "Well," said Hermione, "I thought he sounded a bit like you."
"Like me?"
"Yes, when you were telling us it's like what it's like to face Voldemort. You said it wasn't just memorizing a bunch of spells. You said it was just you and your brains and your guts. Well, wasn't that what Snape was saying? That it really comes down to being brave and quick-thinking?" Harry was so disarmed that she had thought his words were well worth memorizing as a standard book of spells that he did not argue. And I think we'll stop there. And we'll continue next time. And I hope you like that, my darling kitten. It's bedtime. Sleep well. I love you so much.